Welcome everyone, we are back for the final episode of season 4 of the podcast.
We've been on that long,
Robbie. We've somehow managed to get to this point. This is usually where we kill off a couple of random characters in the show, bring a few other people in. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Officer at Basketball Victoria. With me I have Mike Zeppel, the High Performance Coach for Metro. Welcome, Mike.
Still on the air, Robbie. Done so well. It hasn't been all doom and gloom from Talking Split.
Not at all. And it's funny, like our esteemed leader, Waldo, the other day, did just drop, you know, I didn't think this would last any more than, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. And, you know, somehow you guys have got to a year in. So, you know, just proving the haters wrong.
Well, he's prying for a guest spot on the pod, so we're just trying to...
He's dropped numerous hints, and it is probably the best part of my week. Every time it's like, no, we've already got someone this week, mate. Or we've already got the topic discussed this week, so...
We want to bring him on when it's when it's really, really good.
Exactly, so
we're
just,
We're building up.
He claims to listen to the show, never listens to the show. We'll find out fairly soon if he does or not. But this is, I'll give everyone fair warning, this is the part of the show where you can usually skip forward 15 seconds if you need to. If you could like, share, retweet, put that thing out there on social media when it drops, that would be fantastic. Ratings and reviews on the iTunes store. You can get it on iTunes, Spotify, Audio Boom. I reckon I've done that in about 15 seconds. So welcome back, mate, to all our other listeners gone the quick skip.
You've got used to that.
Yeah, I've sort of reeled that off. When you can start reciting it for me as well, we've done incredibly well. So it's been a fairly interesting week in hoops,
as it usually is.
Social media is not necessarily your forte,
but
there's been a number of little interesting things drop during the week,
It's been brought to my attention, though, this social media this week, Robbie, and it's the off-season, so I guess off-season and social media combined, well, NBA and now WNBA off-season combined, the NBL Blitz, which we'll talk about a little bit later, firing up, so it's kind of been the basketball off-season, and when those two things come together, you get workout videos on social media, Robbie.
Which brings us to probably where a lot of kids are, which is their off-season. Obviously, between VJBL, there are a number of clubs that have started up trials already, which makes my eyes water.
Interesting.
Like, there are some kids, I think,
that finished part of their player development philosophy, Robbie.
So, there was a few kids, I think, that walked off the court Friday night and were on court trialing again 48 hours later, which is, you know, sort of the cycle that we go through at the moment. But I think we saw it last year was the birth of Hoodie Mello out in Brooklyn or New York. I think he was scrimmaging, and there's, you know, various NBA player workouts going on everywhere. And someone I saw tweet at Damian Lillard during the week, like, hey, you know, this is fantastic. We're seeing all these guys working out, but where's Lillard? Like, why is he not getting better? And as a Portland guy at heart, like, I didn't want to throw him under the bus and go, it's a good point. I'm confident that this guy is doing the work. And it's, and his response effectively was, just because I'm not posting it doesn't mean it's not happening.
Well, Dame and I might have the same philosophy on life, Robbie. Just because we're not present on social media doesn't mean that we're sleeping. I think it started. So the first thing that was brought to my attention, maybe 10 days ago now, 7 to 10 days ago, was this shooting box contraption that went viral on the internet. And it was essentially like this foam box that you could stand in front of the ring and practice your shooting technique, Robbie. So that was the first thing that got sent my way, which was interesting to say the least. You said you would buy one, which is even more...
I've got shares. Shares in the company.
That's not silly. If it's a business move, Robbie, it's not silly at all. So that was an interesting one. And then you see some of the back and forth on the internet around that shooting box, and some NBA shooting coaches that we follow, Dave Hopler and Dave Love, who's been out here recently. They're kind of miffed by it all, which is funny to see. On the back of that was the Dame Lillard workout video where he's rolling around in a scuba mask and playing tennis.
Hula hooping
into crossovers, and very, very funny stuff with Dame. And I guess that was his rebuttal to the, where's Lillard? He's not going to be any good this year. Has he even been working out? I suggest he probably has been.
Very high probability. And this is nothing new either. Like, we've seen these videos come out for a long time, and we talk about it a lot. YouTube's a fantastic resource for coaches to go and just go and find some extra drills or some things you can be doing with your athletes. But it's kind of spiraling out of control a little bit. It's almost like you need to be the quirkiest person going around, or you need to be doing something that no one else is doing to make your workout valid. And even the training aids have been around forever and a day. Like, I remember when I was in under 14, so we're talking easily 20 years ago now.
Cool,
it's been a while. I'm roughly as good now as I was then as well.
Yep, yep.
But we had the NoPeaks. Like, they were probably one of the first training aids I ever remember
explain
using.
Those, Robbie.
So the NoPeaks were just these glasses that apparently prevented you from looking down, which didn't do the job, so I still looked down, which is still why I'm working in coach development as opposed to earning $1 million contracts in the NBA.
But you had a pair, did you?
I had a pair. Okay. They were certainly rentals as opposed to permanent on my head. But that was probably one of the first ones, as well as the shooting disc that sat on your guide hand to stop you from putting your hand in front of the ball.
Yep.
And I must admit, I made more shots with that thing than I ever did for the rest of my life. So there are some valid points to training aids as well. But it almost sort of felt like maybe we're spiraling off a little bit, because you can see all sorts of stuff, like the locks that you put on your elbows to keep them tight.
I've seen that one.
Like the bridges you put across your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
To lift the ball up a little bit. Like, there's a whole range of these sorts of things. And some are great, and some I'm sure are there just to make money.
They're interesting, mate. They're interesting. They are there to make money. Let's not get it twisted on that. There will be some value, like in golf. Golf's another sport that has hundreds of training aids, because people are trying to improve their golf swing the same way that people are trying to improve their jump shot, which is, I guess, the technical skill. You're trying to improve a technical skill, so here is the training aid to help you improve it. I've also known of many basketball players, Robbie, that have never used a training aid and have used a thing we call repetition, and have gone through and also become very good shooters or ball handlers or whatever, the golf swingers as well, Robbie. So I guess what it did in the office when you and me catch up, as we like to do, was kind of bring about the topic of player development and what true player development is, and how we can influence that in what we do in our roles as well.
And it will be different. Like, every age group is going to be a little different. Like, what an under 10 athlete needs is going to be very different from an under 18 athlete. And we were talking, as we usually do, about different podcasts we've heard over the course of the week. And the basketball podcast with Chris Oliver had Phil Begner in, who, as it turns out, is Damian Lillard's trainer and has been since Weber State days.
Yep.
And his, the podcast and what he went through in terms of his plan for Lillard, what he values, how it works, was a really interesting listen. I do encourage all listeners to go out and have a little bit of a listen to that, and we're probably going to rehash a fair bit of this, so listen to ours and then go to that one,
I guess,
if you can.
Yeah, and I guess what was cool about it is he had little pockets of information that we've skirted around, and haven't had a full player development pod on in our four seasons, Robbie, but definitely had skirted around all of those issues. So I guess we'll just put it all together and package it up and kind of talk through our play development philosophies and what it can look like or should look like when we're talking about a 15, 16-year-old young athlete living in Victoria, which is our wheelhouse right here, Robbie.
Well, and I suppose one of the biggest things is how do you influence skill development in a really short amount of time that you're probably going to have with your athletes during the week on probably half a court. Like, it'd be really easy if we had one of the gyms that you see in the States all the time with three courts. There's a dozen buckets around, and you can get everyone doing the same thing, and there can be some correction and repetition and things like that. We don't necessarily have that luxury here. Court shortages being what they are, it does make it difficult.
So, and I think the big part of that is influencing skill development. And I tell parents all the time that NITP is not what is going to make your child or athlete. Influencing skill development is more so, can you influence the athlete to a point where the 60 minutes that you do have them on the floor has motivated and inspired and taught them enough to where they can now go home and, instead of dropping their school bag at 3:30 and jumping on the Xbox or jumping on Facebook or watching a movie, will they drop their school bag, grab a banana, go outside and practice stops, pivots and form shooting? That's the influence that we can have. And it's no different anywhere else in the world. Like, 15 and 16 year old kids really probably should not be having individual trainers who are directly accountable for their development. Like, that's not how it works, because at a moment the access is going to dry up, and if the access dries up, the development should not dry up. So I think where the influence comes, and an under 16 rep coach at a club, an under 14 coach, what a domestic coach, your influence is, yeah, okay, we'll teach you skills for a little bit, but how can you influence and motivate them to grab hold of those teachings and take it further on their own?
Well, a lot of it is self-coaching. We don't always have a coach available to us. If you're a player, like, that time you have with your coach is fairly limited. If you have an hour 10 kids in your team, you are at most getting 10 minutes of their attention.
Yeah.
Like, if that all, that's not right. 6 minutes of their attention.
Good job, Robbie.
Yeah, yeah. Matt's not a real strong suit, obviously, or over the years.
Geography, Robbie.
Yeah, or geography. Like, it's my inter score is starting to reveal itself a little more, but that just makes sense. You're not getting a lot of attention from the coach, and they can only be in so many spots. We want to motivate our athletes to go and do a little bit of self-reflection and self-work. Yeah. So if I keep missing to the left, why am I missing to the left? And I can probably work that out myself. I don't know that I need a coach there to do that for me.
And just a little offshoot thought for you, Robbie. I was actually just thinking about VJBL practices and what they can look like for coaches and teams through the year. And I don't know the answer to this, but it's kind of just food for thought for listeners. How many VJBL coaches or coaches around the country, if they've got a 90-minute workout, split it up into two 45s and just bring five kids in for 45 and then bring five more kids in for 45 and make it true player development where you can get detailed and technical with 4 or 5 year athletes instead of 10 splitting ends, got your back turned sometimes, maybe there's an assistant, like, I wonder how much that happens, because I think there's great value in that.
Huge.
Considering we have limited time and resources to start with.
Especially if you've got an assistant coach. Yep. So you're now getting really, you know,
well, two coaches to five athletes in a half court or full court would be really, really good if you could get that 40 times a year through the representative season.
Absolutely. And it's only that I pulled out my phone quickly and saw that there's another Talent Equation podcast that's come up with I Want to Make Myself Unnecessary. Mm. And I think that is a great goal. And I haven't actually listened to the podcast yet. That'll be the drive home. But I think as coaches, we can be a little fearful at times is that I want my players to need me. And it's actually, no, we want to empower them so that they don't need us as much.
Correct. Hey, like, we do plug a lot of pods on here. I hope those folks are appreciative of our expansive audience that we've got. Hey, Robbie, player development. Yep. These are my first three thoughts in regard to player development. For you to have a player development philosophy, you actually need to have a relationship with your players. First and foremost, you need to have a relationship with them so that when they walk in the gym or you walk in the gym, they know that we're getting better today. And I think that's the first thing you need to really center your philosophy around is how can I connect with these athletes? How can I challenge them? What can I and can I not say to them to motivate or demotivate them? And do they trust me? So important. Do they trust me that in this 55 minutes today, we're getting better? And if I tell you that you're going to toss that ball out and 2 foot stop, reverse pivot, and we're going to do that for 4 or 5 minutes to get your hands and feet warmed up, got to do it. But they love it and they're bought into it because of the importance that they know, because you've made it you've made it known to them that this is really important for your development.
Absolutely. And I think Justin Crowe spoke about this when we were out at the hangar earlier in one of our other podcasts, that the player needs to know that you're in it with them.
Correct.
So you'll succeed with them and you'll fail with them. But the failure is just a avenue that hasn't worked yet. So Adam Gorman spoke about that when we were on the podcast. We're doing a great job of referencing back to a lot of earlier stuff here. So if you don't know what we're talking about, go check out the back catalogue of Talking Split podcasts, obviously. But you need to have that relationship with the player. And that might be as simple as we're going to sit down and have a chat before the start of the season of here's where I want to get to with you. But the big thing is you've got to write it down.
Yeah.
If you don't write that down and you don't have a plan for them, it doesn't matter. It's just words. Right. You can sit there and say, hey, we're going to really develop your three-point game this season. But if it's not something that's tracked and measurable, well, is it really that valuable to them? Yeah. So they need to buy into that as well.
And we'll get to that. And the other part is, and being a very good player as you were, Robbie, this is the thing that athletes register. Am I actually getting better?
Yep.
So if an athlete knows that they're getting better as a result of the stops, the pivots, the jabs, whatever, the shooting technique, the dexterity training, whatever it is, if they can register that they are getting better, they're bought in. If they register that they are getting better at those things, much easier for me to now hold you accountable to close out, to turn and sprint to help, to sprint in defensive transition, to block out, to offense, all those things that make the game up. If the athlete feels like they're getting better, they're in.
Yep.
And then you can be a coach and coach them and coach your team to improve. But I just think that those three things, having a relationship, they've got to trust you, they've got to know that you are that they're getting better, that's the start, that's the precursor to any development that's going to take place.
And what they may not realise is sometimes their base level may not be improving as much, or sometimes that may improve a heap, but their top level may not be getting any better. So they might become an excellent ball handler, whereas they weren't 6 weeks ago. and they really noticed that, but their shots actually improved a heap, but it's, you know, 1 or 2% better. So that doesn't necessarily show up in games all the time as well. And I know it's spoken about a lot that if your best player isn't your hardest worker, you're going to have a lot of problems in your team. Yeah. They have to be a leader within that as well. And the Spurs spoke about it with Duncan a lot, in that you walked into that gym and Popovich chews out Duncan, and Duncan just goes, yep, got it, no worries. And people are staggered. And it's like, well, if it's good enough for him, it's good enough for everyone. So once you have that relationship with your players and they know that, hey, this guy's in it for me, I want to play for this coach, they're going to work harder for you. So you'll get better results. It's no secret, if you have better players, you tend to win more games. Absolutely. And everyone is happier.
Right, and that should be, I think we've spoken about this, maybe not on the pod, but definitely around the desk, is I think your goal as a basketball coach is to try and develop the best player on the floor. And if you can develop over time the best player on the floor, you've got a great chance to win the game. As a result, the flip side of that is trying to coach a good team where, you know, the development's not taking place. You may still win, but you can assure a greater chance of success if you do have the best player on the floor.
Yep. One of the things that Phil Beckner spoke about in his podcast appearance, workout versus development. Mm. So there are plenty of times where you can go through a session with a trainer and you can get a sweat on and you can, you know, repetition is great, but are you actually getting any better? Is that just simply a workout? Or are you developing as an athlete? And we see it. There are tons of personal trainers out there in basketball. It's the same. You know, you can go and find one whenever you want. Pretty much every club would have someone that does individuals at their club, I'd assume. But how many of them are actually improving it? And I had this conversation maybe a week ago with a coach from one of our VJBL clubs. He was talking about, well, it's fine. You can go and work out with whoever you want, but they're not making you any better in our system either.
Mm.
And so. Correct. Does that trainer have a relationship with the club where overarching, you're both working together to try and get this athlete better,
right?
Or are they off doing their own thing and it doesn't actually help the athlete improve at all?
Well, that plays into a little bit of my player development philosophy, Robbie, which we'll talk to in a second. But to your point, we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago before that pod even dropped, and we spoke about the importance of teaching. Yep. Like, it's not coaching, it's actually teaching, and that is development. So that's the workout versus development thing that you just spoke about there. Development is truly teaching, like teaching athletes, young athletes, older athletes, exactly how to play the game, which is different to working out. So to teach how to play the game, you know, there's a technique, there's a process, there's a method to everything, stopping, pivoting, whatever it is, shooting the basketball, like there's a process, there's a technique, we're going to teach it. Then there's going to be repetition, there's going to be boredom, there's going to be mundane, it's going to become monotonous. But that is true development.
Yep.
And that's the hardest stuff to get the athletes and the parents of the athletes to buy into, is that this is the process. Because what is sexier is the Instagram video. It is way more glammed up. There's a soundtrack in the background. Yep. There's graphics. That looks way better.
Coach jumping around on the sideline and hollering at kids.
Correct.
Yeah.
Looks way better. No question. But substance-wise, what are you teaching and what is the technique to then, exactly what you said, to play into the club, the states, the nations, playing style of play or philosophy as well. You mentioned it before, with all of this, with development, teaching, technique, really important for the athlete to know they're getting better. They have to be able to gauge improvement. So, you know, the flip part to development is, how do you measure development? So you can't just say we're developing. How are you going to measure development? And they spoke about on the podcast, we spoke about it at the directors of coaches meeting that we held last weekend, how we actually monitor improvement amongst players. And for those that do not know, we do have a volume shooting program that we operate out of Victoria Metro, and it's been going for probably 8 months now, Robbie. I want to say it started in the middle of February, and it is a volume shooting program where the athletes nominate a time that they want to come in on the night that suits them, once, maybe twice a week, just depends what phase of the season that we are in, and they go through a shooting program, and it goes for 50-55 minutes. They are prescribed the different drills all the way through, and they are against the clock the whole way. So if there's 50 minutes on the clock, they'll start shooting on 50, and when that horn goes right on 0 minutes, they're done with the workout. Makes and misses are charted. They know what percentage they're shooting at the whole time through the workout. By the end of the workout, they know that they've gone 300 for 500 at 60%, and they were this percentage per drill all the way through. They can then track that against last week's score, last month's score, monthly cumulative averages. What was my result this week compared to the first workout I did on February the 8th at the start of the year? And that's how you monitor improvement. And then that helps you with your relationship with the athlete, because then you can say to the athlete, hey mate, you went at 65% last night. Your first workout or your second workout, you're at 48.5%. You're doing a great job. And then there's the motivation. There's them coming back into the workout the next week or a couple of days later. I want to beat that score. We've got records and record holders for all of our different drills, which the athletes do know. So if we're moving into a 3-minute no rebounder, they know that the record holder is this athlete. They made this many shots from this many. They were 25 for 31 in 3 minutes. The record is held by this person. Go get it. And that's also part of that motivating factor around development and having these athletes thirsty to keep getting better.
Well, and it's been around for a little while now, like the CO. We had shooting testing, I think, four or 5 years ago, yep. And it was great that we were able to do that at NITP level. Once it came back to the States, NPP athletes, we had a block where we had to go through testing as well, and it was great to see the athletes challenge themselves a little bit. And one of the questions that got raised at an All-State camp, I think it was, are you teaching the athletes to shoot better, or are you teaching them to beat the drill?
Correct.
And it was a great question, because I mean, sometimes it is literally you're great at shooting this drill under these controlled circumstances, but are you becoming a better shooter? And this ties into what you were saying earlier. By their percentages going up as an athlete, now they want them to keep going up. It's when they dip that they start to try and work out and second guess what's gone wrong here. Why do I need to, you know, what do I need to change? Something's clearly gone wrong.
Right.
You want them to get into that mindset of a culture of I want to keep going uphill rather than downhill. Correct. So it's an easy way to track
And that's a part of these. So I guess that's a good point. With these workouts, we're not testing per se.
Correct.
Like, yeah, you're getting monitored and measured and gauged on your performance across the workout or, you know, the shooting program, but we're not testing at a one-time thing. So, you know, first drill is 5 minutes, the first 5 minutes are 1-2-step mid-range jumpers. So in 5 minutes, one athlete with two balls will get between 95 and 105 shots up, which is a lot of shots in 5 minutes. Yep. And they go from spot to spot and they're shooting. So there's a technique to what we teach. We teach everything off a 1-2-step because we're dealing with 15 and 16 year old athletes, but we're not testing them per se. They are obviously getting tested, but they do have, and we will stop workouts to teach and technique. And when we take in a young under 15 or under 16 athlete, there is the very much, we got to slow this thing down and teach the 1-2-step and body position and things like that. So that's a big part of being able to monitor and track development.
And that can be whatever drill you want to. Like, you don't need to necessarily use the drills that you use. You can go and find any drill that you value that will help your athletes in a game, and you can just work with that with them. And it doesn't need to be a magical graph or anything like that, but just something where you can track along the way that, hey, you know what, and it might be as simple as free throws. You might chart all your free throws at practice over the course of a season, and by the end of it, you know, hey, who's our best free throw shooter, who's not our best free throw shooter. I mean, the bit that I like about the volume shooting, obviously, is they have to shoot when tired, which replicates games.
Yep.
So you want them shooting as they'd feel in the fourth quarter, as opposed to when they're always fresh in the first. Absolutely. So there is a level with that as well.
Absolutely. I guess this is the next part we can talk about, Robbie, is to be a player development-minded coach or run a player development-minded program, you need a player development philosophy. And we've dropped the word philosophy on this pod often, but you do need to have a vision for what you want your athletes to look like. And it was spoken about on the podcast, having a plan. But before the plan is the philosophy. What do you want your athletes to look like? And some thoughts I've got around my own player development philosophy is I think everything is predicated on creating habits that will allow our athletes, 15, 16, 17-year-old young males and females, to play for any coach in the world. And when I started, I kind of thought, well, what does every coach want to coach? And we've all got that athlete where we're like, oh, aside from hard working, okay, hard working cannot be the reason why you enjoy coaching a certain player. But what do they want? They want an athlete that has great hand and foot dexterity. Okay, so can they pass with both hands? Can they pivot with both feet? Can they execute the different pivots on both feet? Reverse pivots, inside pivots, forward pivots, shooting ability. Okay, my thought with shooting ability at the moment is it ties directly into decision making. So if your first decision on the catch is, I can shoot this in rhythm if I'm open, that now helps your decision-making process from that point on. If your decision when you catch the ball is, I can't shoot this ball because I'm out of range and out of rhythm, that now muddies the decision-making path from that point forward. So being able to shoot the ball is incredibly important, and I know I've spoken about this maybe every pod, Robbie.
Quite possibly, in fact.
Maybe every pod. So hand and foot dexterity, critical. Shooting ability, critical. And I want people around the country to understand that athletes from Melbourne, which historically have been seen as very competitive, hardworking, intense, that's not what they are defined by. The third one, which the word definition comes in, is that you have to have a defining skill. Like, what is your defining skill? I don't think you want to be the athlete that is pretty good at all things, because if you're pretty good at all things, where's the separation come? Yep. You do want to be elite or defining in one or two skills. That may be shooting a basketball. That may be decision making. That may be that you are a taller player. You're a really good athlete, so you have a great motor. You run great, and you're a great sealer. Like, what is your defining skill that can help you be selected for teams and ultimately make money one day?
Realistically, not everyone will have an athlete that can be world class at everything. Correct. Which is fine. Like, there's no problem with that. So that might relate back to you're playing VJL3 with your kids. Try and make that kid the best shooter in that age group. So try and just get them above the pack more than anything else, because as soon as you get one, everyone will try and chase it. So that flows on down the road. And you touched on decision making there as well, which is a really important aspect of this. If you can't shoot the ball, you never have to make that decision about, do I shoot this or do I drive this, and what's best for the team? Because the decision is made before you've even caught the ball. You know I can't shoot this, so it has to be a drive, which then leads into, well, this is a really easy scout. Like, we know this is now a short closeout kid. We don't have to go and get a handout there, which actually impacts your team down the road. So there's, and I spoke to a coach about it not too long ago, about an athlete they worked with, said, this player is fantastic. Everything you would want in a player, hardworking, athletic, great decision maker, but cannot shoot the ball and refuses to shoot the ball. So consequently impacts their team down the line, because instead of taking what is a good team shot, which might be the corner three off penetration, split kick and extra, the open three, that now becomes, I don't know that I can make this, so I have to put the ball on the floor, which actually hurts their team more. So now they're driving into traffic. No one knows where that shot's coming from. Harder to get D-trans points on.
Yep.
It just blows everything up. So if you need to spend more time getting the kids better at shooting the ball is the big thing. If we've all seen it. We've coached in games where it just feels like we can't make a bucket. We know we're the better team. But down the other end, we look down there and think, yeah, we have more talent. We should be okay. But the ball just continues to go in from the three-point line. And it's like, man, they could just throw it in from anywhere at this point and they'd make the bucket. Like, they are hard teams to play against. And if you can do that more often than not, you'll be fine. Like, you'll find a way to compete with everyone if you can shoot the ball well. It's the great equalizer, I feel like, when you don't have size in particular, is if you can shoot it, you're fine.
That's NCAA March Madness. Like, good shooting teams get hot and they're all of a sudden either knock off a higher seed or they get close to knocking off a higher seed. The final point on player development philosophy that I've got, Robbie, is that all of this is predicated by what happens most in the game. Okay, so everything that, if you think about the game, how many passes are made, the result of every pass is a stop and a catch. So you've got to be really good at catching, stopping. Once you stop, the next thing you do is pivot. So you've got to be really good at catching, stopping, and pivoting, because it happens every, what, 3-4 seconds on the floor. So we would be doing a disservice to our athletes, especially at a young age, 12, 13, 14, if we were not spending ample time on teaching dexterity, because passing leads to catching, stopping, and pivoting. And I think that is the basis for this young athlete development that we are challenged with here in Australia, is how do you build the athlete from the ground up, that is the foundation of who they are. From there, now, once they have that down, then you can start to layer on top of it, which people, I'm sure, do. And you know, a lot of clubs and programs have skills matrices, and once you get competent at A, you move on to B and C. But passing, catching, stopping, and pivoting, mate, that's where it starts. And if you have athletes that are really good at that, they can move on from there.
Well, and passing is a really interesting one as well. Like, it's, I was at a course not too long ago when, you know, I sort of threw it out there to all the coaches that were with me. Hey, what sort of passes are there in basketball? And without fail, the first one that comes up is chest pass.
Mm.
Every time. And I cannot, like, go into this tangent every time. I cannot remember the last chest pass I saw in a game.
Mm.
Like, it just doesn't exist anymore. There is very minimal room for it in the game.
It's harder.
It's everything's a push pass. Everything is a step with. The days of, we're going to stand there and stand 10 feet apart from each other, I'm going to step with one foot, snap the ball with my thumbs pointing. It doesn't happen. Like, when do you get a chance to do that in a game? If you can do that in a game, you should probably be shooting the ball. Like, because you are that clearly that open.
That open, right.
Like, it's, there's no other time. So having game-based situations where players can get better is really important. Like, you might be practicing catching the ball on a turnout cut and just pivoting on your inside foot and up and in, but what are you doing with the passer?
Yep.
Like, are they just throwing a chest pass? Because that doesn't get them any better either. Yep. So you might be working in a tandem. So, like, well, you need to be still off the bounce, you know, throw it with your weak hand, correct, whatever the case may be. But you've got to at least work on multiple skills at once, because as you say, like, the pivoting is really important, but what do you do with it afterwards?
Right.
Like, and there might be some athletes, like, I know my under 12 kids this year, we did a lot of stuff without a basketball just so we could get the footwork down first. They got an understanding of actually how fast do I need to be going, when do I need to slow down, which foot am I going to work with, because as soon as we threw the ball in there, it was chaos.
Mm.
Like, now they're more focused on catching the ball rather than what they're supposed to be doing with their footwork.
Right.
So it was like, well, okay, we're going to layer this and we're going to build this. It's going to start with just making sure that we can get the footwork right. Now that we've got that, let's put the ball in. Now that we've got that right, let's get them into a throwdown. Now they've got that right, let's get them into a catch and shoot.
Mm.
And now it was drive it and pass it to the next side of the floor, so create splits. Like, and was just build over the course. And we did a lot of stuff with our team that was still individual player development. They just didn't realise it at the time.
Right.
And that's the big thing, I think, for mine, is that teach your kid to be multi-skilled athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want them to be good at everything, but really great at the things that matter to you, I think.
Yep, absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Throw it back to that podcast that we listened to on basketball immersion with Phil Beckner. He rattled off five absolutes that he has a part of every one of his workouts, or they make up the five things that he tries to develop in all of his athletes.
Yep.
So the first one that he rattled off, Robbie, was ball handling, and I like the term body and ball movement.
Yep.
Which is essentially you being able to move. And as soon as I hear the words body and ball movement, I just think Steve Nash. Like, his ability to look like he's running out there and the ball is just an extension of his body.
And it's funny because he's a guy that grew up playing a lot of soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of watch him move and it's like he's just dribbling a soccer
ball. That's a sport. Like, that's a sport where if you haven't got body and ball movement, then you can't actually even play.
Well, and there's a lot of flair involved with that too, I think, which is, I do believe it's what a lot of our kids do lack a little bit of, is flair.
Mm.
So it's really interesting. And one of the things he spoke about was ball precision, like where you are dribbling the ball and at what point.
Yep.
Like, that ability to, say, come off an on-ball screen, for argument's sake, the defense hard shows.
Mm.
Where are you going to place that ball as you're coming off that on-ball screen? So if you're just ball at a gate, no, I'm just going forwards and that's where it is, bad luck, you're going to turn the ball over a lot.
Yeah.
So the ability to make the decision, read where the defense is at and where you're going to place the ball on that dribble is really important.
Mm-hmm.
So when he goes into that, obviously his next part was rips, pivots and jabs.
My favorite one, Robbie.
Was
my favorite
on
one.
Every catch.
My favorite
which
one.
Led a little bit from what you were talking about earlier, but it's absolutely correct. Like, from that point, you will have to do everything once you catch the ball. One of those three things, and sometimes two of those three things.
Yeah.
Well, it's...
Oh, mate, absolutely. If you cannot do that, Robbie, those three things, you actually can't play. Like, it's finished. Being able to catch, pivot, rip, and jab. We start out every workout, or it is very early on every workout that I do in the evenings with our nationally identified kids, has an element of stopping, pivoting, catching, ripping, and repeat. And I'll challenge them with some different things, and we'll layer that as we get through the program and as they get older as well. But you're never above stopping and pivoting. Like, that is something that NBA athletes, EuroLeague, Olympians, male, female, it doesn't matter, will be working on how they stop, pivot, rip, and jab.
And if you do that with enough intensity, that's a really good warm-up for your athletes
too.
Great. Like, you get some ball handling into that, your athletes are warmed up, because I mean, realistically, you're never going to go 100 straight away. But I think every coach would love a kid that's explosive, And I think if you're good at rips, pivots, and jabs, and you're explosive with that, you're much harder to guard, because now they have to gap off you a little bit because they play for the drive. Well, if you can shoot that, now that leads into the next part as well. So it's absolutely just building blocks, I think, more than anything else.
The third one was change pace, changing direction, which is probably something that gets spoken about a lot in basketball, because it is very much a dynamic, agile sport, and your ability to change pace, stop and go, change direction, stop and go, is really important. And having an element of that in a workout, however, whether it's off the catch, off the dribble, cutting is changing pace, changing direction, all of that plays into that third one of changing pace, change direction.
Absolutely. Fourth one's obviously finishing. So it's amazing how often we see coaches. I mean, what's the shot you want the most in a game? Ultimately, is a layup.
Fade away three, Robbie.
Well, yeah, probably your percentages aren't going to be great. Or it's
you're talking about for you. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. Right. Your junior career is a different world. Well, that was just called ISO ball, I'm led to believe. But realistically, everyone wants a layup, and you need to be able to finish inside hand, outside hand, with contact, 1 foot stop, 2 foot stop. They're vital. You need to be able to do that at pace with contact.
Point of difference, Robbie.
Yep.
Like, can make you money.
Yep.
Like, if you can finish, it can actually make you money. I actually, and it's different for me on the male and female side. I think you can teach the game in a similar manner. But ladies that can finish in the paint and make a three will make money. Like, it's sure. And the numbers that you look at through national champions, like AJC's national championships, have the most statistical data that we can take. And the teams that finish well in the paint, both on the boys' and the girls' side, generally do have pretty successful weeks. So that is huge.
Yep.
In player development. And how you teach that is really interesting as well. So how are you actually teaching a one-foot layup or a two-foot power layup or whatever steps and step-throughs and counters and all those things play into it? You told a really good story about Luke Longley and his post-development philosophy, or what he thought of the post, and he said, he's like, you need two moves. You need your post move, and you need your counter to your post move. How you teach that and your philosophy in teaching that is really interesting.
Absolutely. And we also, every team goes out and does layup lines before a game, and you know they sort of do them at half pace, and you know usually on the third or fourth one on the left-hand side, you try and dunk on the front of the rim, because that's pretty much the only way you can do it.
Absolutely.
But so many teams also use 3-on-3 to start off with, or 2-on-1 or 3-on-2. And I think it's a great way to warm up, because now you should really get a layup. You have a numerical advantage. So now you're starting to teach finishing with contact, with defense, with decision-making involved as well, which I think is a really important part of it, which gets lost a lot of the time as well. And, and I know Phil Begner spoke about not necessarily teaching runners and floaters to young athletes, which I think is a great point. Like, it's so hard to get right. And he was talking about Lillard. Took 4 or 5 years in the league before he got really good at it. And I think a lot of the reasons he's actually really good at it is because he can shoot the three.
Right.
So now he's forcing longer closeouts, so he has to put the ball on the floor, and eventually there's going to be a 7-footer come and try and change that thing somewhere. But it is, like, get good at the basic things first.
Oh, glass net, Robbie. Like, your ability to jump off 1 foot, 2 foot, and just go glass net and finish the play is really, really important, mate. And the fifth one is something we might have spoken about before, Robbie. Shooting. So it is a part of his workouts in some capacity, whether you're shooting technique, volume shooting, shooting off the move, shooting off the bounce. So to be good at shooting, Robbie, you got to actually shoot the ball and shoot it plenty. Now, for our young athletes, they're not going to have access to I wouldn't think they will have access to a player development coach 7 days a week. So how you can get that shooting in, a lot of that's on you as an athlete. Like, can you just go outside and just self-toss the ball, 2 foot stop, pivot, square up and shoot the ball in? And can you do that over and over again? And, you know, obviously as coaches, we will help plant the seed with the technique and the passion to become a good shooter eventually. But a lot of that shooting, those best shoot, Damian Lillard was an elite shooter because he wants to be an elite shooter.
Absolutely. And, you know, one time the courts are generally free, 6 a.m. So if you really want to go and get some work in, most courts are open. The YMCAs and the places like that do have basketball rings. You can go and get that work in whenever you want. But it is doing the boring stuff. And it's that whole, you know, what are you doing when no one else is watching? And this is where I think Lillard was coming from. Like, you can sit there and you can see the Instagram videos and the Facebook posts about all the work that all these other people are doing. Doesn't mean he's not doing it. Oh, he's just doing it without the cameras. And I think that's a really important part of it, is you need to go do the boring stuff and not worry about the likes and the shares that you get on the social media and the check-ins from, hey, you know, I'm down at the YMCA at 5:30 getting work in, where's everyone else? Yeah. You shouldn't be doing it for that reason. If you're doing it for that reason, you're just looking to boost the ego, I think.
Yeah.
But I think it is really important too that if you are going to go and do one of those workouts, you get something out of it. So that is the motivation and the discipline to go and correct the things that might be going wrong during the workout. I cringe every time I see a workout with a trainer there that allows the kids to carry, to dribble, to double dribble, like things that are not allowed in games. So if they're not allowed in games, don't practice them. There are some really good things out there where I sit there and say, okay, I'll get where you're going with this. You know, the change of direction, you are trying to at least improve. But it's the ones where you sit there and say, you can't do this in a game, so why are you practicing it? They're the ones that kind of get me a little bit too. So you do need to be a little bit careful with who you're training. And let's face it, if you're paying someone to be your trainer, what is the message going to come back from that trainer?
You're developing and you're pretty good and you should come back next
They keep getting paid. So, of course, that's what they're after as well. So you do need to be a little bit careful, and you do want someone, obviously, that is got the best interests of you as the individual in heart. Right. So I think that's really important, and that might be as simple as, hey, we're going to check in with someone once every month. I'm going to go to my trainer and sort of find out what they think I need correcting, and then I'm going to go away and work on it for 4 weeks, and I'm going to go check back in again. Yep. So it doesn't necessarily need to be I have a trainer 4 days a week. I think you can certainly work out.
And I guess the whole thing with this player development message, and I do want this to be the message throughout Melbourne, is that basketball is a player development sport. It's a player development sport, and it's a mature sport. And when I say mature sport, that means that it takes you maturing as an athlete and as a person, which means you're not 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. It takes development and maturity to become a very good long-term basketball player. And I do want the message. I think we have a group of coaches in Melbourne who I've been working with for the past couple of years who do value player development, and that they do push that message out there, because that is the biggest thing. For you to be an elite long-term player, you have to buy into player development.
Yep. Hey, you went and visited the Burbs during the week, I'm led to believe. Took the high-performance hat off for a little while and went back to the little people, so to speak.
I did, Robbie. I did. This is a call to action, Robbie. It is a challenge and a call to action. We haven't done something like this before, Robbie, but I'm going to use the vehicle or the platform that is this thriving podcast that we've got to seek some help from our listenership. So I did. I'm not going to say where I went, Robbie, but I did go out. I went and watched an under 10 girls domestic grand final on Tuesday evening. It was my second cousin, Robbie. She's going to be a little star. She's a jet. But this is what
you shoot the ball as much as you do?
No, we're hoping to fix that, Robbie. Yeah. We're hoping to fix that, which I'll talk about in a second. So went and watched it. Girls were very excited to play. They unfortunately went down, Robbie. There were some tears from some of the athletes. They got over it very quickly and went
supporters
bowling. Went bowling. Well. Nah, supporters are okay. They went bowling straight after it and kind of forgot about the game, which is how you want your 9-year-old girls to be. So this is the issue, Robbie. I waltzed in to watch it. Paid my $2.50 at the door. So I did tip in, Robbie. I knew you were going to ask. They played an under 10 domestic girls game on 10 foot rings from the regulation foul line, and it was 2 20-minute halves.
So 5-on-5?
5-on-5, with 7 players per team, which was
good.
Yeah, you've spoken about that often, how smaller team numbers do help players obviously play more but get more touches of the ball. The two that were obvious concerns to me were the 10 foot rings and the regulation foul line. Played with a size 5 ball.
Yep, like that.
Yep. Now, score at halftime, Robbie, was 4-10. The team with 4 points had 12 fouls, and the team with 10 points had 6 fouls. So the point total was 14, and the foul total was 18.
Are you bashing? You're not bashing refs, are you?
Not at all.
Okay,
no,
good.
Not,
just
not
making
at,
sure.
Not at
making
all.
Sure.
Not at all. So, a lot, no, the fouls were the fouls. My issue was the points not being more, more
right.
than the fouls. So, as I settled into my seat, Robbie, and I watched the game unfold, it became very evident that the girls were able to find zero success through the game. They actually get open, but they are so far away from the basket when they get open that they just are either uncomfortable shooting it, unwilling to shoot it, don't feel they've got enough time to shoot it. So the game becomes a little bit like circle work in footy. So ball gets driven hard down the right-hand side of the court, right-hand dribble. Girl may chuck it up the floor to someone who's open. She's going to shoot it over the right side of the basket to the opposite side of the basket, long rebound. Someone's going to grab it on the other side of the basket, and now that girl is going to dribble hard down the right-hand side of the floor and shoot it back over the right side of the ring, and it becomes circle work. And in to break up the circle work, a foul or a travel is called, as you can imagine, with under 10 girls domestic. But I sat there for the hour, Robbie, thinking, how have we gotten to this point? So I know what the answers are. The answers are it's hard to get scheduling done properly. It's hard to get our under 10s and under 8s and under 12s on venues where you can lower the rings. It's hard to get, I don't know, officials to referee all these games at venues. It's hard for different domestic clubs or different clubs to use different venues from different associations. And I know the challenges out there, but the call to action, Robbie, is for somebody. Like, there has to be a listener out there, a club listening, a president of a domestic association, president of a representative association, a director of coaching, somebody who will get fed up with this soon enough and start to impact and make some change, or start to talk about what change can be made. Because what I saw on Tuesday night was, I think, something that can be avoided. Now, to avoid it, it will take work. That means we'll not be able to roll out the same fixture year after year. We will have to actually take into consideration that we have to find venues that can support under 8s, under 10s and under 12s. It might mean changing the way that we schedule games. It might change the way that we schedule seasons in the domestic competitions. But I think that we do have to come together and start to talk about exactly what you and I are pretty passionate about.
Yeah, no question. And it's amazing how many people we talked to that were at the showcase. And we did send a survey out to all the parents that were the under 12 showcase that we ran in the July school holidays, I think it was. Overwhelmingly positive about the experience, because it looked like basketball was the big thing that sort of came back to us. And people were a little divided on the rim height. Like, some really loved it or some really disliked it, which is cool. Like, there's no problem with that whatsoever. It was just
an
opinion. Yeah, like, of course. And it was just opinion, ultimately. But talking to a lot of the parents, again, I was at a coaching course not too long ago where I had a parent of a child that was at the showcase, and they said, apart from the fact that it was in Werribee, they loved it. It was the best part about it. Like, they, but their thing was,
failed that person.
No, they were fine. They passed with flying colours. Ultimately, they sort of said, we enjoyed watching the basketball a little bit more because they could do stuff on those in that sort of situation that they weren't actually able to do any other time. So they loved it. And I do think it's just a little bit of a shift more than anything else. I don't know that we need to sit there and say, hey, we need to make wholesale changes here. It's just a little bit of movement, and it might be that it's size 5 basketball to start off with. Then it might be lowered rim heights.
Yeah.
Who knows? Like, it might be playing crossways on the court rather than the full length of the court, whatever it is. But I do think it's worth looking at now, where it's like, well, okay, basketball is a great sport. We have fantastic participation numbers, and the clubs and associations do a fantastic job out there.
No question.
But why be content with, we do a great job, and let's go and do an outstanding job and try and make this better again? Like, who knows where this will be in 20 years' time?
Correct. And it is a change. And I think the change can't be... I don't think the mindset or the thought on the change can be like, we're tampering with the sanctity of the game. It 100% would not be tampering with the blessed sport of basketball. There are numerous under 13 competitions throughout Europe and countries that have these competitions or participate this way, where under 13 athletes, so bottom age under 14 in Australia, are still playing on 8'6" rings. So whereas athletes here would have already played, VJBL athletes would have already played on 10-foot rings for 3 years as a bottom age 12, top 12, bottom 14. These athletes are still on 8'6" rings, which is really interesting.
Yep.
And it is something that, you know, we've got to be cognizant about and kind of think outside of what we know and where we live. But for countries throughout the rest of the world to be playing on under 13 athletes playing on 8-6 rings, and I go watch an under 10 domestic game, and those little tiny girls are playing on 10-foot rings. That's amazing. The girls are like 8 years of age. And we're comparing them to 12-year-olds in other countries still playing on 8-foot-6 rings. So I do think we've got to talk about it. Have to talk. And there's an association out there. I'm just trying to figure out who's going to, maybe Casey Robbie, maybe Werribee might jump on, maybe Ballarat or Bendigo in the country. Somebody will be able to start to look at this and say, we can make a difference. And we can start to tweak. We can start to experiment. It might be, let's just start with the under-10s. Maybe we find a way to make that happen and see if we can track some progress and track some development that way, because I do think you need to set these kids up for successes to where they want to come back and keep playing and playing and playing in the future. So that was Tuesday, and it was a little disturbing for me, Robbie. I was concerned when I was sitting there, but also opportunity, because with issue and with things like this comes unbelievable opportunity. Like, we've got a pretty good basketball playing nation at the moment, and I think we just got to keep evolving, reinventing yourself, and there will be ways for us to fix it.
Yeah, I think so too. And there's probably ties now into the weekend news that we're tucking into as well. I am up at the under 12 Jamboree over the next weekend, right, up in Echuca.
Sounds like you are going to raise this at one of the breakout sessions.
It might be on the paddle steamer that it comes up that, hey, how about we discuss size 5 basketballs or 8-foot-6 rims or something along those lines as well.
Love that.
Because there is the FIBA mini basket convention out there as well, which incorporates a 3-on-3 tournament on the Saturday night before the whole Jamboree kicks off following on from that, which is, I mean, the Jamboree has been going for a long time, which is essentially the showcase for the country athletes as well. So, same sorts of things. But that's on this weekend. So, awesome. I'll look forward to seeing a number of country coaches up there, which will be brilliant.
Awesome.
Please come up and say hi. We may even get you podcasting too long.
Up there.
Men of the people. Men of the people.
Love that, Robbie. Love that.
Keeping it in the country areas, the Australian men played in Bendigo on Monday night against Kazakhstan. I don't think they've quite qualified for the World Cup just yet. I think they've still got to win a couple, but I think it'd take something fairly left of centre to miss out from here.
I think they won in a Winx-like canter, the Australian men. Did you like how I did that, Robbie?
Yeah, did very well.
Like how I did
very well indeed. Also up in Bendigo at the moment is the NBL Blitz.
Yeah, that's unbelievable facility. I haven't been on TV this afternoon.
Really nice.
Look beautiful.
It's a fantastic gym up there. It's and I don't think a bad seat in the house either. No. Like, the way it's been set out is really nice. It's great to watch basketball on. So that is fantastic.
What
keeping
else
it semi country ish.
Yep.
We've got 14 clubs coming up.
Yeah.
So the 14 girls are up in Shepparton, second week school holidays, I think it is. Yep. And the 14 boys are at Kilsyth.
At Kilsyth.
They are.
Absolutely.
Any teams you're looking out for at that thing?
Robbie, believe it or not, the Werribee Basketball Association is back on our international prominence, and their under 14 boys will be playing in Kilsyth, vying for a under 14 clubs championship. So
excellent.
No, I've got no favourites, Robbie, but good luck to them more so than anyone else.
Yep, of course. Which, of course, ties into VC finals that are on here tomorrow night.
Tonight,
depending on where you're listening to it, or potentially a couple of weeks back,
exactly.
Depending on
exactly.
When you listen to this podcast.
Exactly, wrapping up. Season's wrapping up.
It is, before trials kick off in probably the next 2 weeks. I think usually after school holidays, that kicks off. FIBA Women's World Cup is on this weekend.
This weekend,
it kicks
Robbie,
off. Tess Levy, a Vic country athlete, is a late inclusion.
Late inclusion.
Replacing Mansfield, unfortunately. But that'll be great. Download that on the app.
It's in Tenerife, Spain, Robbie. Yep. How's your geography?
Yep.
You'll visit there next year on your Euro tour, I am sure.
I will do.
Best of luck to the girls and the staff, and I'm sure they will do well. They played a practice match last night, I think you said.
Against Team USA and lost by 10.
Lost by 10, 60 to 70, so I'm sure they will keep building on that. And,
hopefully be around the mark.
I'm excited to watch a lot of that, Robbie.
Yep. Our last thing is the under-15 Australian coaches appointments have just been made. Tracy York, congratulations to her, will be taking the
Tracy.
Women's team.
Congrats.
Now, the men's team.
The funny. Well,
how do we deal with this?
Congratulations,
Justin.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we'll get that out of the way. Rap that he's got the job.
Congratulations.
Fantastic. Papua New Guinea, I think he's off to.
Under-15s.
Under-15s. Yep. So that's at the end of the year.
So congrats to our whole colleague and pod host, podcast co-host. Obviously, rap for him, and I'm sure he'll do an awesome job. But a funny one came across our desk, Robbie.
It did.
A funny one. And what I'm actually hoping is that the great man downloads this app and they go to the US next week to go to the NBA / NBL exhibition practice games. And I'm hope he's sitting somewhere in like row 79G, somewhere back there, and is just listening to this up in the sky somewhere. But a funny one came across our desk, Robbie. And we usually don't use any derogatory language in the office, but someone mentioned Basketball South Australia today and that they had posted congratulations to their very own J.Shula. And very, very funny that Basketball SA has claimed the great man, because he's been trying to disown them for years, Rob.
No question. If you were to ask me about what's Justin Shaw about, basketball, first.
Yep.
Bombers, second. Mm. Tasmania, probably third. Like, South Australia are a long way down the line on that. Like, he took great delight in bumping them out of NBL playoffs last year.
He did. He did. Like, And we, you know, we obviously support our great mate, and we won't be posting anything on social about his appointment. But we are absolutely thrilled for him, and he'll do a sensational job. Again, talking about that, good luck to all the NBL teams going overseas to the US coming up for those exhibition games. Awesome, again, that we're able to go over there.
Phenomenal.
And put our league on display, and I think that just helps with the growth of the league for years to come.
Yeah, no question at all. That wraps us up.
Robbie, season 4
in the books,
done and dusted. If this one doesn't get us in too much trouble, then we'll be back for season 5. But seriously, the call to action. Let's start to open up the channels and figure out how we can address some of these issues to grow the game and give more enjoyment to those young people coming through.
Yeah, no question. Big thanks to everyone that's listened all the way through. We are on a break, obviously, for school holidays. This is usually when we have a little bit of downtime. So that is season 4.
Downtime,
inadvertent commas. Big thanks to everyone that does listen, that likes, that shares, the retweets, the ratings, the reviews. They do only take a couple of minutes, but we do check in on those things. So we do appreciate the support from the coaching faithful out there as well. Season 5 coming up fairly soon. You back for season 5?
Season 5, Robbie, we'll kick back in term, what's that, term 4 of the school year?
Yeah, that sounds
term
right.
Term 4 of the school year. Yeah. We'll be back, Robbie, with some big time guests.
Absolutely. We will talk to you guys in a couple of weeks' time. Thanks for talking Split with us.